You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Best-selling author Charles Swindoll is one of today's most trusted pastors, authors, and Bible teachers, former president and current chancellor of Dallas Theological Seminary, and now senior pastor of Stonebriar Community Church in Frisco, Texas. His books are always relevant and full of useful insights for daily living. And folks, he's done it again with his latest two releases, Marriage from Surviving to Thriving and Parenting from Surviving to Thriving. Chuck Swindoll, thanks for joining us on The Drew Marshall Show.
Hey, man.
How are you?
You're the famous Drew Marshall.
Stop it. You're killing me here.
Oh, you're welcome, Drew. It's great to be with you.
Before we start with the formal stuff, let's talk about Norm and Virginia Rohr.
How about that? How do you know them?
Well, I was on staff at Hume Lake for a number of years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
He is Mr. Hume Lake.
He is.
You know what? I got to tell you a quick story. Norm Rohr is the father of Rand Rohr.
Yep.
Who married Beverly Peters.
Now, was he the Navy SEAL?
That's right. Yeah. Well, actually, he was a Marine in reconnaissance work that did a lot of the tough stuff behind the scenes in the Gulf War.
Got it.
Yeah. He married Bev Peters, who is the daughter of my longtime assistant at Fullerton, whose name is Helen Peters. Isn't that a small world?
That is a small world.
You know Norm, and we know Rand, and I knew Norm. Great guy. He's a writer.
And what about Bobby Phillips or Kenny Poor?
Oh, my goodness. Aren't they fun guys? Bob Phillips did a book with Howie Hendricks on virtues. Now, that's an amazing thing. Bob Phillips doing a book on virtues. that's funny. Oh, man.
I am so glad that you released these books together, in a sense, and titled them the way they're titled, because almost everyone I talk to is just merely surviving their marriage.
Yep.
or merely surviving parenting.
You know what? We kind of wrestled with that because you rarely see books with the same subtitle, From Surviving to Thriving in this case. But I thought both of these are about that. Marriage, parenting. People struggle with the process moving from surviving to thriving. And let me make it clear, thriving does not mean the ideal.
Hmm.
There is no such thing as the ideal marriage. The only ideal marriage was Adam and Eve before the fall. Since then, we've got sinners that are learning how to live together, forgive each other, relate together. So these books are very realistic. These are about life as it really is. In my case, 51 years of marriage. And as far as the marriage is concerned, and in parenting, 4 kids and 10 grandkids.
Well, as Tony Campolo would say, 51 years of marriage and 40 of the best years of your life, right?
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
When's the last time you talked to Tony?
Oh, a few weeks back. He's just sort of a regular on our show, and he's the first guy, I think, to ever swear on Christian radio.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is, but not the last.
No. Now, listen, your parents married in 1930, and then by October 18th, 1934, only 4 years later, they had their 3 kids, and the family was complete.
Man, you've done your homework, and I was that 3rd kid.
Yeah, and that's kind of, well, that's why they shut it down, I would imagine.
That's right. You better believe
it. Forget this stuff. These days, when the children come along that fast and furious that early in a marriage, it seems to cause, more often than not, a huge amount of stress.
Yeah.
Was it just different, a different time back in the day of your parents?
Oh, yeah. Simpler times. You know, if you were Rip Van Winkle and went to sleep way back when they got married, you woke up, you know, 1995 or the year 2007, you'd be shocked at the differences. Life was more simple. My mother never worked. My dad held a job down 8 hours a day or night. He worked second shift. Life was simple, little 3-bedroom home, 1 bathroom, and we all went to the same schools, and we all grew up very securely, very comfortably, and very happily. A lot of happiness, a lot of singing, a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Okay.
Yeah, it really was.
So, that may be the answer to this next question, which is, what did your mom and dad model in their marriage that you took with you into your marriage?
Oh, that's a great question. And part of it would be fun. Just life is not meant to be endured. It's meant to be enjoyed. We make it an endurance test when we blow it as it relates to God's ways and God's word. And I'm not going to preach here, but my folks had a way of putting biblical principles into action. They just believed in loving their kids. They believed in disciplining us when we were wrong. They told the truth. They didn't run around on each other. They, as a result of their lives together, decided we're going to just make the best of the way life is. I don't think my dad ever made $10,000 a year in his entire life. Our home cost $9,000. Is that no, $5,999. That was our home that we were raised in. Now, I realize that was bought in the 40s, so the homes were small then, and that's the way it was. But we never knew we were poor. We never, I thought everybody had beans and cornbread and
Wait a minute, everybody doesn't eat beans and cornbread?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought they all did. We still do. Cynthia and I will do greens and cornbread sometime, or collard greens or beans and cornbread, and I'll say that's still the best thing on the planet. And our kids look at us like we are from Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you eat that kind of stuff? Anyway, they invested in us time and love and an interest in the arts, a love for life. If there was one thing heard in our home more than anything else, it was laughter. And the other thing that was heard in our home was music.
Well, growing up with two siblings, Lucy and Orville.
Yep.
You were the youngest. Were you a typical youngest child, like spoiled and a real pain in the...
No, I wasn't spoiled.
No?
They didn't want me. I was a mistake. I didn't understand that till we had our third child. I came along, and my mother thought she was only going to have two, and she had me, and so I found out that, you know, I wasn't planned, so I certainly wasn't spoiled. I got the leftovers. My dad, my brother's the one that got the nice car, but I'm the guy that got his old car.
Huh.
You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
And he got a new bike. I got the old bike for my paper route. But you know what? It wasn't mistreatment. It was just life as it was. I never knew that there was anything like that was a problem. You didn't have any time to think about yourself.
No.
It wasn't a spirit of entitlement. It wasn't about how can I make you fulfilled in life. It was, look, we all have to work hard. You got a tough situation. Cry me a river.
Yeah, suck
Get
it up.
Get out there and work your way through it.
Suck it up, princess.
And we did.
Yeah.
We did.
I can't figure out whether you were a sort of a rebellious jerk or a teacher's pet while you were at Charles Milby High School.
You are really something. You know what? I was probably a little bit of both. Actually, I came on the heels of a brilliant brother who never saw a bee in his life. I mean, he has the most boring report card. My report card had variety,
yeah,
let me tell you.
Yeah, that's what it's
but
about.
But his was boring. My sister is a 10-talent gal, could sing, the captain of the volleyball team. She was a swimmer. And here I came along, Mr. Klutz. And I stuttered. But you know what? I had a drama teacher in high school that helped me know how to speak in public, how to overcome the stuttering. What a contribution he made to my life.
Hmm.
And my world was drama and the stage. And I loved acting and all that went into that. So, and I love music. So all of us love music.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the way it was in high school.
How did you meet Cynthia? I'd love to hear the proposal story.
Well, yeah. I'll do it real quick. I was leading music in a youth revival kind of a setup back then in the 50s, and we needed a piano player to travel with us, and somebody said Cynthia Parker plays great piano, plus she's not bad to look at, so why don't we get her to do this with us? And we did, and man, I tell you, I went nuts over her. I asked her to marry me in 1 week.
In 1 week?
Yeah, I waited that long to make sure she was the one.
Boy.
You know, I had to wait to make sure.
You got
to
just got to take it easy.
18 months later, we married. She was 18, I was 20.
Really?
Yep.
Someone said to me the other day, one of the problems is that people are, especially in the Jesus community, because we want kids to kind of wait a little bit and, you know, kind of
yep.
make more mature decisions and stuff.
Yep.
But we're getting married too old. Like, we should be getting married younger.
You know what? It is an interesting phenomenon, Drew. I've noticed that. In the weddings I've had, it isn't uncommon to marry couples in their 30s.
Hmm.
In fact, it's unusual. I can't remember the last time I married a couple where one of them was still an older teenager.
Hmm.
I can't remember the last time. I can't remember when they were young 20s. They're mid-20s to 40.
Yeah. Well,
they are marrying later. They're going to school later, by the way, at Dallas Seminary. We noticed the average age now is about 34.
Wow.
When I was there, it was like 28. So even that's a lot of second career thing going
on. Yeah. How have you and Cynthia not just become another statistic? I mean, how have you stayed married since 55?
We've learned to forgive each other when we do a dumb thing. We have learned to talk through our difficulties and conflicts rather than pout and go in the other room or run off with somebody else's partner. We've learned to be honest rather than lie to each other. We've learned to honor each other truly rather than take pot shots at each other. We've learned to be vulnerable. When you're wrong, you say, you know what, I'm wrong. I'll give you an example. I usually give them against myself. This is Cynthia. She answered me rather curtly yesterday, which was kind of a tough day for me, and I said, why'd you answer me like that? She said, well, what you said irritated me. And I walked away, and she came in there. It wasn't 10 minutes, Drew. It wasn't 10 minutes. She said, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? I grabbed her. I just embraced her, and I said, that's the thing I've loved about you for years, is you say what you read. I've learned it from you. I've learned that you are really as honest as people think you are, and I thank you for that. So we've learned to do that. We've learned to, we don't go to bed angry. We don't go to bed back to back. We've sat up till 3 o'clock in the morning talking stuff through it. Believe me, at 3 in the morning, you'll agree to anything. You'll say, I'm sorry to anything to just get 4 hours sleep. It works.
Oh, man. Well, look, the marriage stuff, the parenting stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about, well, give me an example. I watch I can't watch it, actually, but when I've seen little snippets of Super Nanny or whatever it's called, that show where the little brats are just running all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And you just want to pound the kids, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if your time in the Marines helped you parent at all.
You know what the Marines taught me? They taught me to be a leader. They didn't teach me gentleness. They didn't teach me compassion. But they taught me to hang tough when the going is rough. That's one of the things I learned. I also learned that if you have a responsibility, you have a responsibility. If you don't do it, don't blame another person. Say, I didn't do it. I failed to do it. Last week at the church, I told a guy I would take care of something. He asked me in a staff meeting today, by the way, did you handle that? I said, no, I didn't. I forgot. And I'm wrong. I'll take care of it. And between then and this interview, I took care of it. I think if I hadn't been in the Marine Corps where you had to face the truth regarding your own responsibility, I'd have probably sneaked out of it. I'd have worded it another. Yeah, I'm going to take care of that or something like that. I've learned to say, no, I didn't. Or, yes, I did. That helped me. And so when you parent, you mean what you say. You aren't afraid to lead. We're now living in a culture where the kids lead. And they're miserable. They are miserable. They're now expected to lead the home. How dumb is that?
Yeah.
But neither is brutality the answer.
No.
Or abuse. I hate those things. But you take the lead and you lead lovingly, gently, but firmly. It's amazing. Kids love it. They love it. It's when you don't do that that they turn against you. You got to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
You got to be consistent. And when you were wrong, you got to say, I was wrong. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I'll do my best to never do that again. I've never seen a kid not willing to forgive when they've been reared like that.
Well said. Since you graduated magna cum laude from DTS, Dallas Theological Seminary,
yeah,
in 59 or something like that, ordained in 63, served with Dr. J. Dwight Pentecost, you've held pastorates in Massachusetts, Texas, of course, E.V. Fullerton, California for, you were there for like 100 years, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah, doctorate from Talbot, doctor from Taylor, doctor from Pepperdine, doctor from Dallas,
yeah,
Baptist,
stop.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
Right? How has your theology changed? I mean, is there stuff you used to believe and even preached on that now you look back on and cringe?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I graduated, I had answers to questions people nobody asked. You know, everything was buttoned down tight. I think back then I would have come close to predicting the return of Christ. You know, I never did, but I was just assured that within the next 10 years he'd come back. If the communists didn't take over, that was the big deal back then.
Right, right.
I've learned, maybe not necessarily a change in theology, but I've learned to temper the dogmatism. You need to realize that if God isn't that specific, you don't have any reason to be that specific. Now, where he is, I am specific. And I don't bend on that. But, you know, I've said for years, God is a lot easier to get along with than most Christians.
Well said. When was the last time you accidentally laid down your hog?
Oh, boy. I was gassing it up And I wasn't even on the road, and it got away from me. I should have put the kickstand down, and I didn't, and it fell over on me. Yeah.
Because I've met
Thankfully, I wasn't on the street.
I've met you in Australia a few years back, and, I mean, you're not the biggest guy in the world, right?
Right. And that thing is 800 pounds, fully gassed up.
And yet you hauled right in 94 at that PK conference to Born to be Wild. I can't believe how many Jesus people peaked on that, man. They just absolutely lost their... It was like Pat Boone coming on stage with leathers.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, you remember that.
Listen, I've listened to and read your stuff for years. In fact, whenever I want to convince someone that I'm not the liberal radical they think I am, I often drop your name as a key influence over the years, right?
You do sound like a rascal to me.
But except for that God's Will book you did just completely messed me up for weeks.
Oh, did it?
Oh, man. Anyway.
The Mystery of God's Will.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, thanks for that one. That was a lot of sleepless nights. But, like, is it just me, or have you lightened up over the years? You seem to be funnier these days than back in the day.
I'm easier to live with. I don't beat the sheep. I try to lead the sheep. You don't drive sheep. You drive cattle. You drive goats, but you lead sheep. And I've learned if you create a thirst, they'll want to drink. If you provide the green meadows, they'll want to eat. And there's no reason to feel like you're the Bible answer man. Forgive me if that comes across the wrong way, but yeah. I am not. I find now, Drew, that more often than I ever used to, I say to people, I don't know. You know, why is it that that couple had a baby that was congenitally deformed, and the couple next door has four children perfectly healthy? The couple next door don't walk with Jesus, and this couple with the child in the needs love Christ with their whole heart. I don't know. I don't know.
It sounds like you and Billy Graham have mellowed quite nicely like fine wines.
You know what? I am honored to be named in the same sentence as that prophet with honor. I don't know of anybody I admire more than Billy Graham.
Larry King's always trying to nail people down, the Jesus people, with the question, you know, if I don't believe in Jesus, am I going to hell, right? He always asked that.
Yeah.
And the best answer I ever heard was Mr. Graham's last interview where he said, Larry, all I know is without Jesus, there's no guarantee.
Isn't that a great answer? You know, part of the reason he's so great, he's got a great wife. Let me tell you a Ruth Graham line. You'll love it. Ruth Graham said, it's my job to love Billy. It's God's job to make him good.
Nice.
Isn't that good?
Nice. I like that.
Will like that. It takes the sweat out of it.
Yeah.
God didn't give me to Billy to straighten up his life. He gave Billy to me to love. God's plenty able to make him good.
I think I'm going to have to get Cynthia one of these days and get the real dirt on you.
You know what? She would give you the straight scoop. I'm crazy about her, by the way. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, I think you might have mentioned
that. Oh, okay. I just want to be
After you did.
51 years, I'm still nuts over her.
Well, look, if anybody is going to get my instant respect with an attempt on one of these books, you know, how to survive, not even survive, but how to thrive in marriage.
Again,
the title Marriage from Surviving to Thriving.
Yeah.
And if anybody's going to get my attention with a parenting book, yet another parenting book, it's going to be you. I mean,
oh, man.
You got how many grandkids?
I got 10.
And
are they fabulous or what? They are absolutely magnificent. I've said for years, unless you're Charles Manson, you could be a grandparent that's on the kind of schlocky, and the grandkids don't know it. They love you. They accept you. I mean, my grandkids quote me, and I say to their parents, listen to that. And the parents say, yeah, I know, Dad. It's a little bit of a problem we're trying to resolve it. I think my job is to help those grandkids know what great parents they have.
Nice.
And I tell them that.
Nice.
I tell them that. You know what Cynthia said the other day? All four of our kids are better parents than we were.
Oh, man.
I said, you're right. They are. They learn from you.
They
had a way of overlooking my stuff, and they learned from you how to do it. And they now do it. It's just great.
You kill me. Folks, again, a great time here with the one and only Charles Swindoll. The books again, Marriage from Surviving to Thriving and Parenting from Surviving to Thriving. Of course, you can get them anywhere. Absolutely anywhere. Of course, your local Christian bookstore. But seriously, Chuck, I've just appreciated your stickability.
Well, you know what? It's a big thing with me. I learned a lot of it from Ray Steadman, who was the most real pastor I ever knew. And he's one of the guys that laugh at himself, standing right there in the pulpit. I've learned to do that from him. And it just, I just think it's important to be who you are. Nobody turns off authenticity.
Well,
nobody likes a phony. So why don't we just be who we are?
Well, I don't know, and I'll leave you with this. I don't know whether I could totally agree with you, because I was just on Canada's largest Christian television show, 100 Huntley Street.
Oh Lord!
And they refused to air my genuine vulnerability approach to the Jesus thing here. They showed it live once and then pulled the repeat off. And
that is so good. It's like a guy told me the other day: to be fired from some places is a great compliment.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, be careful on your Harley, man.
I appreciate your time.
I'm thrilled to do it.
Thanks, mate.
Bye, Drew.
Bye-bye.
Have you listened to the Drew Marshall Show before?
George Bush is the Antichrist. Honest to God.
You think George Bush is the Antichrist?
Yes.
Okay, so George Bush is the Antichrist because he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. He's fooling people. He's a trickster.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely.
Why? He's the Antichrist.
I think the guy needs to read his Bible.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely. I hope he's not the Antichrist, because then I'm going to vote for the wrong guy.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.